Welcome to the IT Babble podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com. Oh, we're back. Second week in a row. It's so exciting. Tony, I am sitting here drinking an Elysian Night Owl pumpkin ale, and it is, I'm not a big pumpkin person. Pumpkin like pie, I don't like. Pumpkin chai doesn't do anything to, but this is a pretty tasty adult beverage, I gotta say. It's pretty darn good.
That sounds too fancy for me, Patrick.
No.
Although I have been drinking some sparkling water lately called Liquid Death, and it's in a black can. And it says Liquid Death on it, and it has like a black and gold can. And I enjoy walking around my school with it in my hand. And that's something that I'm going to continue to do until I'm asked to never, ever bring it back into the building.
No.
Liquid Death. It's actually really good water. So
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, Liquid Death.
Highly
recommend it.
I'm gonna put that in our show notes here. On another note, Tony. So remember last week, I got my computer back from repair, and it was kind of a mess. Bunch of drivers weren't working.
I'm sorry. Can you wait just a second? My child is screaming.
Oh, yeah. Should we pause?
Okay. Yeah, just pause. Just stay on the line.
Okay.
Bye. Just stay on. I'll be right back.
Yep. Oh, for you listeners out there, that's but just a second or two, but Tony is back, and his child is doing okay.
Yeah, he's okay now.
That's good.
So he's only been in bed like about an hour, and I got him up, and he was like, are we going to have breakfast? And I was like, no, you're going back to sleep.
Yeah, it's. Well, I'm glad that he's got his priorities straight. That's good. That's really important. Yeah. So, let's see here. Let me see. Okay. I was talking about my computer. Yeah. So I wiped it clean and was reinstalling Windows 10, and it's like, hey, do you want to try Windows 11? And I was like, yes. So I got Windows 11, and it's fine. It's totally fine. It works. It's a little cleaner. It's a little easier to navigate. Yeah, it's fine. There's nothing offensive here. There's nothing that's truly broken that needs to be addressed.
What did it get you, Patrick? What did you gain? That's the question we all want to know.
Well, what I was hoping to gain was the control panel to be gone and everything just to be under settings. But no, the control panel is still very much alive. But one thing that it has improved is it's much better with Bluetooth. Like the Bluetooth driver is greatly improved. It's faster to connect, and it's just more consistent. Another thing is it just looks a little nicer, and it is easier to navigate through. It's easier to find stuff. That's fine. That's good. I think they have a little bit more touch screen focus in mind too with it. Things are a little easier to touch. Not as many missed touches. So, but no, it's fine. It's good. It's free upgrade.
That's good.
You know, it'll be there. It'll be free for ever for people, I believe, as long as you have Windows 10. And so, yeah, get it whenever you want to.
So you don't think we should be worried if people at work upgrade?
I don't know.
I haven't really heard anything bad. Like, you know,
I haven't heard any. I had one like complete where it freaked out. I tried to. It has to-do pre-installed with Windows 11, which used to be Wunderlist. And then Microsoft bought them, didn't do anything with it, just rebranded it to-do. And I tried to open it up, and my computer lost its mind and crashed. That's the only issue I've had. Everything else works as expected. Windows 11, I mean, I don't know if it'd be ready for work because I mean we would have to support that, but But yeah, if you just want to go and try it out for yourself, I think it's totally fine. I don't think it's going to like destroy anybody's workflow or cause anybody to like corrupt files or anything like that. And so we'll see.
Well, if it is really bad, you should encourage users to switch so that you can get them onto Apple products or Chromebooks faster. That would be my recommendation.
Yes.
Yeah. Just be like, oh, you know, this is just going to keep happening unless we switch to something that's easier to manage and doesn't get attacked by ransomware.
Yeah. No kidding. But hey, Tony, I don't know if you've seen the agenda, but we have a good agenda. We're going to talk about Google Forms, for using that for event signup, and kind of how what we did with that. You have on there, don't use blockchain. I'm wondering, yeah. Why not? I'm kind of very curious about this. But first, I want to talk about something that has nothing to do with education. I just want to talk about Netflix's new show, Squid Game. I think it's been out for like 2 or 3 weeks. My wife and I have been watching it. We are on the last episode. And
So are you recommending it? Because you also recommended Gangnam Style by Psy, and it did become a huge hit.
It was huge. It was awesome. It was so much fun. Yes, I'm recommending it. This is also a South Korean entertainment product. It's coming out of South Korea.
How violent is it? Because my wife does not watch very violent things.
It is very violent. There's a lot of blood. There's a lot of blood and a lot of
murder. Is it like that movie, The Cube, where they have to escape?
No.
Solving puzzles?
No. So here's like the premise. These people are invited to go and play these games, which are children games. But if you lose, you get killed. And all of these people are financially desperate. Like they owe millions. They owe hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. Like there's no way they can get out of this debt. And if they have to play through six games, and if they make it through six games, then they get this like $30 million cash prize. I've got a little clip here. Do you want to hear a clip from episode one?
Let's do it.
Here we go.
Every person standing here in this room is living on the brink of financial ruin. You all have debts that you can't pay off. When we first went to see each of you, not a single one of you trusted us. But as you all know, we played a game, and as we promised, gave you money when you won. And suddenly, everyone here trusted us. You called and volunteered to participate in this game of your own free will. So this is it. I'll give you one last chance to choose. Will you go back to living your old and depressing lives, getting chased by your creditors, or will you act and seize this last opportunity we're offering here?
Oh, there you go. So that kind of sums it up right there, and and so they end up playing these games, and it's the acting is really good, the writing is really good, the production quality is top notch. It's wonderful. If you don't mind blood and some gore, we're not talking about like entrails, but we're like, you know, blood spotter. It's really, really, really good. The characters are well written, and you get invested in all of them. Even some of the characters you don't like, there are clear reasons why you don't like character A or character B or whatever. It's good.
Right.
It's really good. It's awesome. You should definitely check it out. I think you would like it. I don't know if your wife would like it, if she doesn't like super violent stuff.
I don't think she'll like it.
But it's good. It's good. I think it's definitely deserving of the attention it's getting right now. So it's really good. But Netflix is going to get super greedy, and they're going to make sequels to it. They're going to make other seasons for it, and it's just going to ruin it. So I'm just going to enjoy season one.
So this is it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is it. I think this is it. Season two will probably be good, but I don't know. I don't know. Anyway, Netflix, Squid Game, check it out. It's good. Very good. I don't know.
That's why it's good to tune in to IT Babble, because you don't just get the IT Babble.
No.
You get recommendations for interesting drinks.
Yep.
And You know, if you're a busy person, you get a good recommendation for how to use your entertainment time.
That's right. And another thing that's kind of good about Squid Game is it, I think there's only 9 episodes and they're about an hour long each. So it's not like some of our American shows, which are like 20 episodes for a season.
Right.
This is just 9 episodes. Boom. It's just good. Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. Check it out. It's good. I recommend it. I like that stuff. So, I don't like. Wait a minute, I gotta rephrase that. I like that type of those types of shows. Those like moral quandary shows. I don't like playing games to kill people.
Even children's games to kill people.
Even children's games. Even yeah. Oh man. Oh how in the world do we segue to the next topic? I don't even know. I don't even know.
I don't know. It's about Google Forms. Let's just get into it. This is about Google Forms.
All right. So, are we at my school? We offer after school activities. It's an additional cost for families, and it's just our families. It's just offered to our community, just because we don't have the resources to open it up to the outside because it's. We want the classes to remain fairly small, and a lot of parents are really, and we have like, you know, chess and cooking and like we have some fun ones, and kids are real into it. And so the person who runs it was like, I want to do a sign up, but I want to do it electronically, but I want to have all of the choices on one form. In the past, they'd use a Google form, but it would be. Each activity had its own Google form.
Had to have its own form.
Yeah, and parents hated it.
Yeah.
But so she's like, how can we do this? But we have to have a limit. We can't have like 30 people signing up for the same activity.
It's got to kind of close itself.
It does. And so there is this add-on for Google Forms called Form Ranger made by New Visions. And New Visions, they make a bunch of add-ons for Google stuff. Google products, and their add-ons are great. They're free, and best of all, they work and are updated in a timely manner. So and what this thing does is it allows you to put limits, but it doesn't do it the way you might think. So you make multiple choice questions, but you leave them completely blank, Tony. You don't put anything in there. Maybe the question, well, you know, we have like, Monday, what did you like to Tuesday? And then we had the offerings.
Right.
But we leave those offerings blank. We don't put anything in there. And so what Form Ranger does is it looks at a spreadsheet, and that's where all the magic happens. That's where the filtering happens. And when it hits a limit, it removes it from the form.
Okay.
So like the spreadsheet is running everything and the form is just tied to the spreadsheet when it's usually the other way around.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But the biggest problem was just thinking through the form. What is the best way for the form? Should we have multiple pages for like each day?
Right.
Should we have it all on just one page? Those things I think people overlook. And those are the things that people really need. Like, what am I asking? What information do I want to capture? And how can I structure the form to give me the information that I need? And I think a lot of people look past
here's
that.
Here's a tip.
Yep.
Never let people type anything. I don't care what it is. Don't let them type anything. They're not allowed to type. They just choose. If I have a form... I actually do this. This is how crazy I am about this. If I have a form that for whatever reason has to be, open, meaning, it's not a form someone's sending from their like work email, but let's say that in this form you choose like a student name, I will put all the student names in the form in the dropdown before I release it. Cause I don't want anyone typing any student names.
Yeah, we are
insane. I can't handle it.
Yeah, and it's because people, it'll be like, what's your favorite color? And two people can write blue, and one person can capitalize B, and one person will have it lowercase b, and Google Forms will see that as two unique entries. It won't count them the same. So, yeah, we were multiple choice for that, but we did ask for the student's name. But if a family, if there was more than one kid in the family, they had to fill out the form again.
Right, yeah.
So there was no...
And you have to do that for anything. I've used sign-up systems where there's a family ID, and even all the family ID does is when you create the parent record, it links them to two students at the same time. But they still have to do the form, even in these paid systems, twice, mm-hmm. once for each student. They can't just do it once.
Yeah,
it doesn't work. And it gets kind of messy anyway. There's usually a lot on the screen. So you want to, that's because you were talking about, should you make multiple pages? And that's kind of always a debate, because if you make multiple pages and people can hit next, it looks a lot nicer. It's like a lot cleaner. But then some people don't know when they're finished.
That's right. That's right. Or they forget what they're like, oh my gosh, what did I pick on Monday?
And here's a question, Patrick. What happened to SurveyMonkey? I haven't even seen it for years. Oh, is it dead? Are people still using it?
So it's still there. It's still around. It's still as expensive as ever.
I just don't feel like we need it. We haven't needed it for a long time.
Our advancement team, our alumni team, they use it because it has such nice reports. Mm. I don't mind just getting a spreadsheet and making charts and organizing it. I kind of like that kind of stuff. They don't want to deal with that at all. They just want to hit a button and have pie charts and then have results. And that's what SurveyMonkey offers, but at quite the price. It is pretty,
yeah, pricey. I'm gonna bite the bullet this year and do at least like a week's worth of practice with Google Data Studio, just building some templates that link in so that when we do any kind of form, it can just pull like analytics with very few changes. That's my goal, is to make basically a Google Data Studio kind of template. And what you do is you go in and the core information, it always pulls, and then you just update the field names for the other stuff. But I'm going to start working with that because I've seen some recent iterations of it that are better than it was like even a year ago. It's not my favorite. I'm a big fan of Amazon QuickSight, but Amazon QuickSight isn't free. In Microsoft Power BI, you have to get a special license. I can't remember if it's free or not, but it doesn't come standard. You have to request it.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to start working more with Google Data Studio to try to create dashboards. Because you're right. I mean, it's not, if you could get the same results with that, there's no reason to pay for SurveyMonkey. And it is expensive.
It is. Yeah. It is expensive. We have a summer program where we have, it's just a bunch of activities. They're like after school activities, but they're offered throughout the day. And we use an event management like service to do it. But they take, I think it's 10%. Mm-hmm. of the total revenue. I mean, it is a chunk, but we offer it to outside, you know, to people outside of our school. Anybody can come and sign up for this, and it's pretty successful. But it takes so much. But it's something far more complicated than Google Forms can do, and we're accepting payment through that service too.
Right. So, like, if you're accepting payment, I understand that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I think we actually have the Blackbaud forms that allow us to take payments for different things.
Oh, not, yeah. Yeah, we have that as well. We just, it's such a, I mean, it works fine. It's just, it's ugly. It's dated. It's, you can do a lot of stuff with it. We just, this person doesn't have access to those forms. And she wants access to. She wants to know who signed up for what. The parents have to pay, but she just reports that to the business office. She just gives them a spreadsheet, and this allows her to do that. They're like, "Hey, here's what all these parents signed up for. Bill them accordingly, and they will just bill them." So, yeah, Form Ranger though, it's sweet. It is sweet. And if you don't know anything about spreadsheets, website,
they seem to have pretty cool plugins. So I'm going to check some of those out.
Autocrat is fantastic. Formule is fantastic. They're all just really good stuff. I haven't used all of them, but I'm taking a look at their stuff. Like Sheet Spider, I have no idea what that does. But DocuPus, I know it sounds so. And Gubrick, those things are really, really sweet. Where you can, if people are submitting like Google Docs, you can tie this DocuPus to anyway. And Gubrick to it, I don't know, it's weird, but you just make your own rubrics, and it'll attach the rubric to the student's Google document.
And so that's cool.
And so you can have all your comments, you can have the score, it's all right there. You get a copy of it, they get a copy of it. It's very transparent. It's awesome. It's really pretty cool. They have good stuff. New Visions Cloud Lab. Check it out. I think they're based out of Brooklyn, New York. But they do really, really great stuff. Just good stuff. Yeah, check it out. Check it out. Anyway, yeah. So that is it. Now, Tony, you have a warning for people out there. You are telling people.
Well, I'm trying to figure out what's going on in our world. And so the last couple of days, people have been bringing up supply chain issues, which I'm aware of a lot of them in some reasons for them. But there's a whole other thing going on now where for some reason trucks can't get to what they need to pick up quickly enough. And I was listening to a podcast today, and it seems like some major companies involved in shipping switched to a blockchain technology to manage their shipping ledgers. So, and I'll bring this back to education in just a minute. Basically, the concept for any kind of shipping and receiving is that you, Patrick, you send me something and you have a shipping number attached to it. Now, I've made the order, so I have like a purchase order number that I've sent to you. So your database should have your shipping number with my purchase order number. I'm sure there's other numbers that we don't even know about because we don't do shipping. And then my database should have my purchase order number, and it should have your shipping information.
Yep.
And
yep.
What happens is, in a lot of cases, there are people in the middle who are making sure all this data is aligned. And I'm sure there are certain companies that try to centralize all this for people, like Salesforce. But you have to reconcile your ledgers all the time. And when you reconcile a ledger, what you're doing is you're saying, okay, this is how it started, but there was a change. They decided to ship it air freight instead of on the sea. Actually, the order was wrong, so they canceled that purchase order and issued a new one. So when you're reconciling, you're making sure that the numbers are up to date and that you don't have garbage in your database. That's basically what you're doing. Okay, so with the blockchain, if you want to learn all about the blockchain and how it works besides just for Bitcoin, you would the best way to explain it, and this is a very simplified way to explain it, and if anyone who likes blockchain listens to this, I will probably have to turn my phone off. They'll like find my number and attack me. They'll be like, you don't know what you're talking about. The blockchain is supposed to be a decentralized, synchronized ledger where I have a copy of it, Patrick has a copy of it, but let's just call it a big, massive, flat file database that has all the data in it.
Yep.
And as changes get made, they're supposed to be updated. So the only change that you would see in the search feature would be the most recent one, and it would have everybody's input. So every time Patrick made a change to his shipping information, there would be an update to the record. But what happens is the old records aren't deleted. They're all part of the chain. That's part of the whole system, that there's a record of everything that happens. So if you've ever tried to buy Bitcoin or any kind of cryptocurrency directly, and I have friends who do this, I'm not really into it, you will notice that it's slow a lot of times to get your purchases through. And the reason it's slow is because these ledgers get really, really big. And when they get big, searching, looking things up, and updating become slow. So I found out the name of this technology, and it's called, it's got a cool name, Patrick.
Hyperledger.
And Hyperledger can be used for shipping, and some shipping companies have been using it. And Hyperledger has a list of critical issues. Let me go down to issue number 3. Okay, these were issues posted in March of 2020. So have they all been solved? Here is it. Here is issue number 3. Ledger pruning and archiving. Some of our customers, e.g. Maritime Shipping Network Tracking, tens of millions of shipments a year, each recording on-chain a large number of documentation and logistics events, could exceed 3 billion transactions a year.
Oh, my gosh. 3 billion. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. The total storage requirements to grow to levels that are going to be difficult to manage. So the ledger works. Yes, I'm sure it's amazing, and I'm sure you don't have to reconcile. You don't need people in the middle. You just need software that can work with the ledger and pull the data. But the ledger is growing exponentially. And what happened is 3 billion is a normal year, a year where everything stopped. And then all of a sudden there was a massive amount of orders all at once. Now, not only do you have more transactions, I'm assuming, than you're supposed to, but you can't possibly search them fast enough. So you can't actually create the next step in the process, which is the order has arrived, this is who needs to pick it up, and this is the information they need to collect it. You can't do it fast enough. So the reason I'm bringing this up is I'm 100% sure that there's some shady company out there who's going to try to sell schools a student information system that is the blockchain. I'm 100% sure it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yep.
I'll tell you right now that in a demo, it will be the greatest thing you've ever seen. It'll be like magic. Like, we don't have to do this anymore. We don't have to do that. All the information's there.
All the information is correct. You can see who changed everything.
You don't have to worry about backups and stuff because there's copies of this, like, encrypted all over the place. You can have it, like, downloaded offline and for, like, emergency use. All that will be true, but it will also be true that the more you use it, the slower it gets. And this is a problem that they have not solved yet without just adding massive amounts of back-end hardware and bandwidth or whatever to make it faster, literally scaling up the infrastructure.
Yeah, and the way
there are people who, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the way that it works with cryptocurrency, the reason why it can expand is that those people who process, at least not with all of them, but I think it's true with Bitcoin and Ethereum, the people who actually process the ledger changes, they get paid in that currency. So they're in essence mining Bitcoin, kind of thing. Like, they get a fraction of it, but the more that they handle, so you get more and more of these nodes, these decentralized nodes to handle it. But here, what you're talking about with Hyperledge or a school information, that stuff is fairly centralized. Like, they're...
Yeah, you're not going to have a bunch of distributed nodes. So even if you did, like, let's say that you had 10,000 shipping companies using it, 10,000 is nothing compared to the total number of people using Bitcoin. It's nothing, right? It's fractional. So I read this and I was shocked. I'm like, wait a second. You stated the practical issues of the technology a year ago, and they're still existing, and you're using it to deal with maybe, I would say, Patrick, the largest international shipping and logistics problem of our time.
Mm. Yeah.
So it can't do it in writing. It can't do it, but you chose it.
It sounds cool, though. It sounds so cool.
So if you work at a school and someone's like, we have a new student information system, and it's based on the blockchain, just like Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You should say, okay, if you pay me 10 Bitcoins, I will look at it. That's what you should say.
And the price of Bitcoin is around $55,000 a coin. So 10 Bitcoins, yeah. And that's pretty good.
I still can't get the shipping delays. I can't get this through to certain people that I work with. There are shipping delays, and they are huge.
Yeah.
There are months and months. you need to start looking at all the stuff that you have, and figuring out creative ways to make do for months. Mm-hmm. And something that I did this year is I found a bunch of stuff we didn't need, and I went and sold it for e-waste recycling credit. So we got some cash back for it. And then I asked our finance person if we're allowed as a nonprofit to use eBay, purchase stuff on eBay, and to even sell stuff on eBay if we have additional items that the recycling company won't take but are still functional. So I'm actually trying to build like a secondary marketplace process so that we can get things that we need in an emergency that aren't new. It's not about buying stuff on an eBay store. It's about, can I buy used stuff that's already out there in the market? And eBay, we can do it. eBay has tools for nonprofits so that you can record and do all the reporting. But so that's what we've been doing, like just kind of preparing. And right now I'm just telling people they have to wait. But if it gets really bad, we're going to start doing these like secondary purchases.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the idea would be if I sell something on eBay, that money stays in eBay to purchase stuff on eBay. It's not going into another budget. That's kind of the concept. So, and then when I was thinking about this Hyperledger, I thought about this teacher who had a problem last week, and I was just listening to the problem. I wasn't really involved. And, this person, the cloud storage, okay, was like a terabyte.
Whoa.
And they're a math teacher.
That's gotta be videos. There's gotta be lots of videos.
You can't search in your normal Google Drive, your normal OneDrive. You can't search a terabyte of data any efficient amount of time. You'll get results. They will give you results, but those results aren't going to be, they're only going to be a percentage of what's in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it's on an external hard drive and you're searching, if it's indexed, like if it's on an Apple and the Apple's indexed all the files or Windows, you can find stuff, but like in the cloud, you're not going to be able to find that stuff.
No,
you have to consider within your cloud, everything basically needs to be in the folders. And those folders need to be, in my opinion, set up like this. You should have your current and you should have your kind of older archive. So when you want to search, current is the stuff you've been using for like the last 3 years as a teacher. You go into current and you search inside that, you'll probably find what you need. And then your archive stuff, after a few years, you just need to either zip it and save it offline, just literally archive it or delete it.
Yep.
The bigger those cloud storage containers are, the slower your searching is. And most people tend to want to search like right before class. So what you're actually doing, and that's fine, but what you're actually doing is you're stopping your own ability to last minute find documents and things that you need by hoarding documents that you're never, ever going to use again.
And I think just a different point is that prior to this year, Google Workspace, it used to be pretty much unlimited. You had like almost unlimited storage for the most part. But now they're putting a cap on that. Unless you have the enterprise version or enterprise version of education for Google Workspace. It's a stupid name, but people who are just putting up their like individual lessons that they did while they were doing distance learning, and they have terabytes, like you're talking about, of data up there. Like eventually they will run out of data. Eventually Google will say no more. you can't save that here. You don't have any space. It's going to happen. Especially for these teachers who use a lot of cloud storage. Ah, man, cloud storage is so good, Tony. It's so good. People should definitely use it because you have it on no matter every device you have. It's there, but you should only put up there what you need and not everything. Don't just put everything up there. And prune, get rid of stuff, delete stuff. Man, these people are going to shoot themselves in the foot. And then you're going to have to fix it up. You're going to have to fix it up. You and I. We're going to have to save the world, Tony.
I don't think we can. I actually just, you know, I try to have this conversation with people, and I'm like, okay, let's open up your files. And I'll just randomly find a folder. I'm like, what's in here? I don't know what's in there. Then I open it up. Okay, what is this stuff? Oh, you know, I don't know. Well, it says you haven't opened it since 2015. So do you think you're going to open it? Like, you think you're going to use it? I found people with files they can't open anymore. Like, have you found people with, like, Shockwave Flash files?
No.
Like, this doesn't work anymore. I have. Like, they have, like, those SWF files. I'm like, this is done. Yeah, this is over.
You need Internet Explorer to open those things up. Or
Microsoft Publisher.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Or they'll have, I don't know. It's just crazy. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it might work. And like, if you have like Explorer 9,
Explorer.
But do you know that you can download virtual boxes from Microsoft of Windows? And when you, that just so you can test old browsers.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's kind of cool. That's interesting.
Get them for like, they work for like 90 days. So you can download them and it'll load a version of Windows, like Windows 7 with IE9, and you just so you can test it. Because I guess a lot of companies have legacy applications.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I guess that could be a solution for these people who need to hoard virtual boxes of old versions of Windows.
Well, so Tony, we still use Zoom as our kind of like video conferencing software. And we have, part of our thing was we had cloud storage. And people would prefer to do it in the cloud because it had a link. It created a link and it just worked. It worked very quickly. Like, it processed it very fast and it was viewable very quickly. So teachers liked it, but I had some teachers with, we only had, I think, 25 gigabytes of space. Was it 25? Anyway, we had some teachers that were eating up almost a third of that. I had like two teachers that made up over half of our, and over the summer, I just went and deleted all of that. I was like, they don't need this anymore. Nobody needs that anymore. They don't need that lesson. They don't. So I didn't hear from anybody. Nobody said, it's like, hey, where did that go? So I think I'm in the clear. I think I'm okay. But man, yeah. I don't know, Tony, do you use cloud storage, right? Obviously you do.
Yeah, I use it, and I have the same problem. Like, I will put too much in it. So then I'll go through, I mean, as far as I know, Silicon Valley, the TV show, has not come true. So Google will not search a compressed space. So if you zip a bunch of folders in a zip file and store it in Google, it won't show up in your search, but you can put them in a folder called archive. So you could be like archive, 2015. And that's, if you ever are like, man, there's something, I just remember I used something. You can just try to think about when you used it last, download that year's worth of stuff, or maybe you do it by subject. Download it to your computer and then open the archive and look through it. That's kind of how I do stuff now. So I'll keep it in Google, but long-term storage. But I also pay for my personal Google, Patrick. I pay for storage. So I have Google Photos and some other stuff, and I pay for like 2 or 3 terabytes of storage. And my wife and I share it. Like, we share the photo storage and stuff. So it's good, and I like it. But you have to organize it. You can't just throw stuff in it.
No, you can't.
Have found people saving applications.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
They won't run because there's no installer, and they're old and they won't run anyway. Like, it's like, you can't do that. It's not going to work. And they're huge. They're huge. It's like, what is this? It's like, oh, it's Photoshop. It's the version I like. Like, it doesn't work.
You can't install it. You can't install that. Yeah.
It's like this is a, your operating system or like whatever, it's just not compatible, but you have to have the installer. You can't just copy the program folder.
Where we found this was, students were downloading, this is before Flash was dead. They were downloading Flash games and putting them in Google Drive. Or just saving them in their download folder of their Chromebook. Like this one kid's like, yeah, my Chromebook won't do anything. It won't. Every time it opens up Gmail, it says it's out of memory. Why is it out of memory? And I was like, what's in your download folder? And I open it up, and there's a ton of these Flash games. And some of these Flash games are huge. I was like, what?
Yeah.
I was like, that is like 300 megabytes. Like, oh, it's Flash. I was like, well, it doesn't work anymore. So delete all of this, and your problem will be solved. And they're like, okay.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, don't ruin your life.
Don't do it. Don't do it, people.
Unless you know what you're doing, don't use the blockchain. Unless you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. Blockchain. Do you have? Speaking of crypto, Tony, do you have crypto? Do you have any crypto?
I don't have crypto. I know it's probably gonna be, you know, what eventually, you know, ruins my life, but I don't.
A colleague that we both know got me into crypto, and I got a little bit of crypto, and it is growing, Tony. It's growing. Every few weeks, my position improves. It's wonderful.
I guess my question with crypto isn't the growth. My question is, how do you sell it when you need it? Meaning, let's say that you've adopted cryptocurrency as an investment strategy. That would mean that you have set a target. And when you hit that target, you're going to start liquidating part of your position.
Yep.
Maybe not all of it, but you're going to say, okay, when I hit this, I'm going to sell. And that's fine, and that's smart, and you would get cash and maybe use it to like buy a house or property, or maybe you just want some cash, maybe use it to buy some assets, something like that. You're going to exchange it. You're going to pay a fee. You're going to pay taxes.
Yep.
But you've got a plan. If the idea is to have crypto because you think in the future it's going to be the only way to purchase things and only people with crypto will be able to buy things – and there'll be like an exchange or whatever, and you don't think that's going to be regulated, that's kind of crazy. And there's some people like that, like, oh, I'm like, I don't think so.
No.
I think if it gets down to that, all of our money will just be converted to crypto. No, maybe you'll have more.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be an investment anymore. The value will go down.
Yeah.
And the value will go down because the ability to use it will not be as strong, meaning you won't be able to get as much per, you know, let's just say bit of cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And then the other question I have too is that if there's a major problem in the world and people want to cash out all at once, and I think that is another reason people have it, that actually is going to be impossible. And this is just something people don't think about.
Yeah.
If everybody has the same problem at the same time, there's no one to buy your cryptocurrency.
Yeah, or there's not enough resources to process. Maybe there are people who want to buy it, but there's not enough resources to process the payment or like the transfer. Like, okay, this person bought it, and there's usually somebody like Coinbase in between who's like, okay, this is going to buy. We're going to sell all your crypto over here, but we are responsible to like putting cash into your bank account for that crypto. And we can't keep up with it because we're just a single entity kind of working on that. Yeah. I don't have a big position. I just got a small position, but it's growing. It's kind of fun. And, if I were to lose everything that I put into it, that would stink, but it's not going to keep me up at night. Kind of a thing, you know. I don't have a third of my retirement in crypto or anything like that. You know, I'm just toying around with it. You know, so
yeah. Well, I do think that, you know, if people want to use it as an investment strategy, that they just, you know, you just can't say, okay, let's say that you bought crypto at like, let's say you bought an actual Bitcoin, you know, at when it was like $15,000, and maybe you bought. Maybe you bought like five of them.
Yeah.
And that's a decent investment. Now it's like over 54,000.
Yep.
And you promised yourself if it ever hit 50, you would sell it. And that was the plan. And you're still holding it, waiting for it to go to 60. That's bad.
That's like, yeah.
I'm not saying that you need to sell all of them. But if you had a plan to sell them at 50 and it's at 54, you should at least sell some of your position. And then whatever the rest of that plan was, you need to follow it. Like if the plan was, I'm going to sell this and I'm going to pay off my debts, then sell it and pay off your debts.
Yeah, but that's true for not just crypto, but that's just true for basic investment too. Like you have a plan, you have a goal, stick to it.
The problem with crypto is that it's kind of like social media. It's got that feed.
Yeah.
And people watch the feed and it stimulates them and it becomes more like a slot machine.
Yeah.
So I guess my advice is if you've been lucky with it and you've met some of your goals, then meet your goals. Like, yeah. Again, I'm not saying you have to sell all of it. That, again, normally it's just not how it works when you invest and you're like, okay, like, there was a point where I owned quite a bit of gold in an ETF.
Yeah.
And I was buying in, you know, when it was like $10, $11, $12, very slowly over a period of a few years. And then I had it benchmarked. If it went over 19, I would sell 75% of it and use that to purchase some other stuff. And, it, you know, last in 2020, when that day when the market just plummeted, it went up to like $26 in a day. And I sold my position. I didn't even hesitate. That was the plan.
Yeah.
It hit it. I sold it. And I didn't take the money out and use it. The money just went right back into a different type of investment, but just to churn the account. But
did you invest in what was that investment? What was it? Was it a Hyperledger by chance? Was that what you were investing in?
No, but I want to invest in Hyperledger now because their salespeople are good enough. Like I think it's a technology people can use. I don't think it's a company.
Yeah.
I didn't really look at that part.
I believe it's open source. Yeah.
Concept. Whoever's selling this concept, Patrick, think about it. They're selling it with the 10 points online that are challenges, and they're selling it anyway. And those challenges are still present, and they still prevent it from working. But they're selling it anyway. We got to find out who this company is. It's whoever's pushing it, man. This is the greatest sales team in the world.
Oh yeah. Oh man, there's a bunch of people that use
it. It will eventually get better. I don't doubt it. And it takes, you know, big challenges like this, but if you're a school, trust me, you don't need the blockchain.
No.
Just say no. It's gonna happen.
Nobody needs a blockchain.
It's gonna happen. We're gonna see it. Someone will contact us, Patrick, and be like, you need to check out our new student information system. It's based on the blockchain. It'll change your life.
I bet it will.
Parents can have a copy of the ledger and they can put it on their phone.
They can check everything. The transparency.
And if they want to know their kid's name, it's right there.
That's right. No bad actors can get in there. No bad actors can get in there and make changes because it's in the blockchain.
That's right.
And
our app is up to date by the second.
That's right.
If you want to know what your kid's face looks like and what classes they have, it's right there.
Is it right there?
Yeah. You need it. And without it, Patrick, if they change classes, now it doesn't update for a few hours. But with this, in the middle of the day when you're at work and you have no idea that they're changing classes, you could see it immediately.
You could. And then you'd be a better parent. You would be a better parent. Don't you want to be a better parent? Get the blockchain. Oh yeah, I've heard. Yeah, I've heard some stuff like not blockchain, but I've heard some others pitch like, don't you care about that? Why don't you care? Care about your kids, your students?
Last year, about installing an appliance, an artificial intelligence appliance to scan for malware. I'm like, I don't think we need that.
We have a service that uses quote unquote artificial intelligence to monitor our student emails and try to catch things. Oh man, that thing is so dumb. That thing is terrible. And you're like, how many years does it take to learn? How many years does it take to learn that they're writing about World War II and that that's not violence and weapons and stop, you know?
Oh, I know. I get that all the time too. Like, I'm like, what? This video is not bad.
Like, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, we can. That could be a topic for another one. Yeah.
We're devolving.
We are. We better get out of here. We better get out of here.
I need to go drink some liquid death.
There you go. There you go. I think I'm going to have another night out. Anyway, for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on babbling out there, people.